The mother of missing Illinois State University grad student Jelani Day is wondering why his case isn't getting as much attention as that of Gabby Petito. Petito was reported missing September 11th. Her case has drawn national media attention and is being investigated by the FBI. Remains believed to be Petito were located September 19th and are currently undergoing a forensic identification. Day has been missing since August 24th. A body recovered September 4th from the Illinois River has yet to be identified. In this interview with Sarah Nardi, Carmen Bolden Day gives an update about her son's case.
It's at a standstill, in my opinion, since they found that unidentified body. It doesn't seem to me that they are pushing to continue to look for my son in the expectation that this unidentified body is him. The Bloomington police, who are still technically, it's in their jurisdiction, in their case, because Jelani's still out there and he's missing. So they should be assuming the role of finding him. They're hitting a lot of what they say are dead ends, so to say. I understand there are other crimes that they have to investigate, but it seemed like I only have this one detective, and I understand he has a life outside of his work. But once he stops, does that mean we stop looking for my son? So I am just a frustration.
So are you being told by the Bloomington Police Department that this is an issue of manpower?
I have been told that. I have been told, Carmen, if we had detectives, we would do A, B, and C, and D. So it appears to me that they don't have enough manpower. One day I'm being told that, and then one day I'm being told, well, we've got 2 and 3 detectives, and then I'm being told, well, we'll call you back. The coroner that's supposed to be working on this dead body, they needed DNA. The Illinois State Police did come out and they took the DNA samples. But then they also wanted dental records. I found the information that they needed. They are now telling us that that is at a delay as well because they don't have the chemical. The state lab does not have the chemical that is needed to process the DNA. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. But you would think by this being a state lab that they can collaborate with other state agencies or even different state agencies to see, hey, can we borrow some of this chemical? You would think they have some type of connections to get this chemical from somewhere.
So does it seem to you that since this body has been recovered from the Illinois River, that the people have reached the conclusion that this must be Jelani? And because they've concluded that the investigation into the case of your son has really fallen off?
Even though they say that's not the case, it's quite evident that it is because there's been a lack of enthusiasm, a lack of anything. I don't have anything. Peru, they're not telling me anything. I don't know anything. I don't know if it was their child. Maybe there would be an urgency on this. Maybe they would still be looking.
You've mentioned in some of your social media posts that you think that there might be a racial component to the way Jelani's case is being handled. Do you think that it would be handled any differently if this were the case of a missing female grad student with blonde hair and blue eyes?
I'm going to say if this had been a missing grad student that had blonde hair and blue eyes, period, this would have been a whole different situation. I don't think the gender made a difference. I think, and again, I just think that the fact that this is a Black male versus someone that was white, we get a whole different perspective of how it's being handled and how it's looked at.
And you've drawn attention on your social media posts to the disparity in the way that the case of a missing woman, Gabby Petito, who has blonde hair and blue eyes, has been handled in comparison to the way your son's case has been handled. Gabby's case is getting more media attention and it's certainly getting more resources. How do you make sense of that as a mother and as a human being?
It's very hard to make sense of because it's like they're telling me that my son isn't as important. And he is. He's just as important. Like, I'm not sitting in this seat and saying that I'm devaluing this young lady's life because I can totally understand what her mother and her family is going through, I wouldn't even minimize their pain. I wouldn't do that. But do you not see us? Do you not see me? Do you not see my son? He is loved. He is wanted. He is important.
That was Carmen Bolden, mother of missing ISU grad student Jelani Day. A spokesperson for the Illinois State Police Division of Forensic Services said they cannot comment on open cases, but all DNA cases are a priority. Bloomington police say that while one detective is assigned to Day's case as a manager, other detectives are assigned as needed. BPD says at one point, five detectives were working the case. Carmen Bolden Day spoke with Sarah Nardi.
An ISU criminal justice sciences expert says the absence of information in the Jelani Day case has not served the public well. The ISU graduate student went missing shortly after the fall term began and was found floating in the Illinois River an hour north of normal weeks later. Illinois State University professor Ralph Weisheit says he's not surprised rumors have swirled about Day's death and disappearance. Part of that, Weisheit says, is from how law enforcement has responded or not responded publicly.
It's really common for people to fill in the blanks in ways that they are most comfortable with. And we don't know from official statements what the cause of death was. But if you're a family member, it is really common to say it couldn't have been suicide. Not possible. I know the person. There's no way they would have done this. And that may be true, but we don't know that. And in the absence of any kind of information or knowledge, and with the belief that my son would never do this, our friend would never do this, it's easy for the rumors to start. And silence on the part of police only makes that worse.
Why have police been silent for so long?
I don't know. I suspect that, for one thing, from the very beginning, it wasn't clear that this was a homicide. It appeared to just be a case of a missing person who may show up at some point. And so there wasn't a lot of urgency in that regard. Secondly, you're talking about, again, a police agency. We're talking in that La Salle, Peru area. This is not one of their people. This is a person from somewhere else. If you're a sheriff, for example, you get votes from local people, not from people in Danville or Bloomington Normal. And so it's not the idea of having press releases and making a lot of statements about it. That may have a low priority if these aren't cases that directly impact the people who you represent.
Are rural departments less likely to be conversant with public opinion and public reaction management than other more urban places?
I think that's probably true. I don't have hard evidence on that one way or the other. But from what I've seen, it would certainly make sense for one to argue that. There's a lot of informal information sharing in more rural agencies. And the need for a structured media response may be seen as less important.
You study rural agencies. How do they respond to the public? You said informal. Is that informal relations with the public or informal relations with other law enforcement agencies?
All of the above. And in fact, again, it will depend on the case. Is it a murder? Is it a suicide? Even for authorities, if it's a suicide, they may be reluctant. If it's a local person, they may be reluctant to report it as a suicide because of potential insurance issues. I remember I had an uncle many years ago who was a volunteer fireman who would respond to accidents in this rural area. And he was talking about a case where there was a car that went off the road and hit an embankment and the person died. And he said, you know, it was pretty obvious it was a suicide. This was not an accident. But we wrote it up as an accident because we didn't want the family to have the shame. We didn't want to have to think about insurance issues that might be affected by calling it a suicide. So we wrote it up as an accident. That's something that is probably less likely in an urban area where the cops may only have a passing knowledge of the people they're dealing with. And so it's more impersonal. They're more likely to go by the book.
What do you think the LaSalle County Sheriff's Department should do to tamp down the rumor mill in this case?
even press releases and media appearances in which they say we don't have anything new to report is better than saying nothing. Maybe they have nothing new to report, and maybe that's part of the reason why they're so quiet. There just isn't much to say, but that's not reassuring to the family, and that's not reassuring to people who are concerned, who are friends and relatives of this individual. And so I think it's just bad PR. Mm-hmm. And there's the other issue, by the way, that I think is worth mentioning. I know that part of it is a problem of perceptions generated by fictional television shows, where there's this impression of, oh, if we get DNA, we can turn it over to the authorities and they'll have the results in a matter of hours.
And that has been one of the themes, that there was an unreasonable delay. What is reasonable? What is a reasonable time to wait in these cases for toxicology, histology, DNA, or comparisons of dental records?
Well, there are two kinds of reasonable. One is, what would be the ideal? The ideal would be you'd know in a day or so, or 2 days, or a week at most. The reality is that all this discussion about defunding the police focuses on cops who are on the street. What doesn't get talked about is the years of shortfalls financially in terms of support for things like forensic labs. They're overworked, understaffed, and part of it is they don't have that visible face that a police officer on the street does.
There are figures out there that suggest the average time for finishing up a response from the state crime lab is in the neighborhood of 81 days.
That doesn't surprise me. And again, it's not because they're lazy. It's not because they don't want to do better. They're just overwhelmed. And if local police agencies are overwhelmed, they can make a case to the public for increased funding, and that increased funding often comes. But again, these labs are invisible. We see them on TV in fictional accounts, but the real world version of it is invisible to most people. And they assume that what they see on TV must be the way it works in reality.
Does this sort of underfunding of analysts mm-hmm. and science within the criminal justice community jeopardize investigatory results?
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just because of delays. We've had cases around the country where individuals working in these labs fabricate information, and not because they're evil, sinister people, but it's a matter of, I got to clear this docket. I am buried in cases. I'm going to say that white powder was heroin without testing it.
It is possible that with a body as decomposed as Jelani Day's was, there might not be much usable evidence left, and it might not be possible to conclude much in the end. That's going to be deeply unsatisfying to law enforcement, to the family, and to the public, which has taken an interest in this case. How should people proceed in that event?
You know, again, I go back to these fictionalized versions on television where there's always an answer. They always find out how the person really died, even if it's a matter of digging him up 20 years later. But that's not how it works in reality. And in many cases, you just will never know. And that's very unsatisfying to supporters of the young man. It's very unsatisfying pretty much to the police. But that's a reality. And quite frankly, even if the body weren't badly decomposed, there may be questions even then. It's not always, again, as obvious as it would be on fictionalized television programs. Well, I do think the Day case is another example of how things get delayed when you're working across multiple jurisdictions. You have the family in Danville, you have the school here in Normal, and then you have the scene in another county entirely.
And one scene in Bloomington as well.
And one scene in Bloomington. I mean, that really complicates things, requiring these agencies to work together perhaps better than they do. I don't know what the relationship is among or between them, but it's not as simple as having everyone in the same office.
So there are lots of places for inefficiencies or delays to creep in spite of everyone's best efforts.
Yes. Yes.
Ralph Weisheit is a professor of criminal justice sciences at ISU. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org.
Now let's lead off with emotions running high over the removal and now partial restoration of a portrait of late ISU student Jelani Day in Uptown Normal. The town of Normal removed that portrait last week, citing town rules for posting on public buildings and indicating the poster would be relocated. That angered demonstrators who gathered last night in Uptown Normal, carrying Black Lives Matter signs and alleging that the portrait would not have been removed if Day were white.
When Black lives are under attack, what do we do? When Black lives are under attack, what do we do?
One of the public commenters at the council meeting was Ann Roundtree, whose daughter Rika died in 2019 in a well-documented DCFS abuse case. The girl's father and stepmother were convicted in her death. Roundtree says she knows what it's like to lose a child because of Rika, so she knows how Jelani's mother feels.
The least we could have done was left his face outside. A memory is all she asked, and y'all couldn't do that much. It's very disappointing.
In advance of last night's demonstration, the town returned the portrait for temporary display within a window at 104 Beaufort Street. That did not quiet the demonstration. One of the speakers was Jamon Lewis, an ISU student and member of ISU's Black Communication Association and the Afro-Socialist Caucus. He listed off nearly a dozen concerns with the police investigation of Day's case, including the 19 days it took to positively identify his body.
So to put that in context, they removed that mural in 3 days. Less time elapsed from the time the mural was up to its taken down than the time that it took to find Jelani's body. That's it.
The crowd eventually made its way to the town council meeting for public comment. Kimberly Cummings, the council's only Black member, says she'd like to see the portrait on display at ISU's new multicultural center.
None of this is ever easy, and we know that in this particular case, that some things have exacerbated the emotions in this moment, but let's not politicize this to be able to find a way to point fingers and create a platform.
She urged the crowd to instead directly support Day's mother, Carmen Bolden Day. Normal Mayor Chris Koo said after the meeting that town leaders knew the decision to take down the portrait would be unpopular, but because it was displayed outside of the public building, allowing it to stay posted could set a broad precedent.
The basic issue was if you allow one, then you've got to allow everyone, and we were concerned about that.
He says the intent was not to offend anybody, and he says if they did, he'll apologize for that publicly.
Jelani Day's family, friends, and supporters from Illinois State University and elsewhere converged on Peru, Illinois, about an hour north of Bloomington Normal, in their search for answers in the ISU graduate student's death. Eric Stock was there today for a march and a drive-by demonstration. How big of a gathering was it?
Well, Charlie, it was mostly a vehicle procession. It was difficult to see how many people were involved total, but there were several dozen vehicles that were lined up starting at the Peru police station where the proceedings started. Jelani Day's family, along with the Reverend Jesse Jackson and his Rainbow Push Coalition, led this tour, and they started with a news conference outside the Peru police station where Carmen Bolden Day, Jelani's mother, and the coalition again made their case that they believe this was a botched investigation, and the information that they have received from police has been sketchy and inconsistent. And the coalition says Carmen Bolden Day requested this trip to help bring some closure.
What did Carmen Bolden Day say about the autopsy report, which the LaSalle County coroner released yesterday, that said Jelani Day had drowned and that there were no signs of injury to his body?
Well, Carmen Bolden Day forcefully dismissed any suggestion that her son would have put himself in harm's way.
Jelani was an avid swimmer, and an avid swimmer doesn't drown himself. Jelani didn't have depression or mental issues. Those are indicative of someone that has suicidal thoughts. That's not what my son had.
Carmen Bolden Day says there is a narrative out there that her son must have hurt himself, and she says that can't be true. She says the autopsy report was an insult to her and to her son. And the interesting thing, as she said this, the LaSalle County coroner, Rich Plonk, was standing maybe 10 feet away in this crowded media gaggle, and we asked him later why he came to the police station.
Well, that was to show support because the family, Carmen Day, asked me to attend, and I said I would, and to come here to show support for their cause. And like I said, I still agree we need to determine why he was, you know, found in the water.
And Plock did stress that the autopsy report only indicates the cause of Jelani Day's death as drowning. It does not explain how he got in the water in the first place. And he says that is up to law enforcement to investigate. And Carmen Bolden Day also made an impassioned plea for help, calling for the Illinois Attorney General to get involved. Apparently, they have reached out to Kwame Raoul's office, and they say they have not heard back.
After so many different calls about for different agencies to investigate, whether it's the state police or the FBI or someone else, who do we know is investigating this case now?
And it's really not clear. We spoke to Bishop Tavis Grant with the Rainbow Push Coalition. He says the Reverend Jesse Jackson himself reached out to the U.S. Justice Department, the director of the FBI, also to Congressman Bobby Rush and Danny Davis's offices. He says they heard from the two congressmen this morning, in fact, but they have not received any commitment of resources in this case. Of course, that would have to be the law enforcement agencies to make that call. Grant says the group met today with Illinois State Police. He says police understand the tone and the tenor of the situation, but again, there's no commitment of resources that were laid out. So beyond that, it's not really clear. They've called for multiple agencies at multiple levels to get involved. Not clear if any of them will be involved in any tangible way. The coalition and Mrs. Day believe that more pressure needs to be applied to these agencies to get them involved.
A statement from the FBI in Chicago does now say that they cannot investigate this, that they can only support other agencies investigating. Now, that differs from another notable investigation nationwide, because in that case, Gabby Partito, that was a multi-state jurisdiction. In this case, it's only local jurisdiction. So where did they take you today?
Well, they went to several places. After the police station visit, we went in a caravan trip through La Salle, Peru, and they took us to the three places that they feel present evidence that doesn't entirely add up. The first is a stop a short distance from the Illinois River where Jelani Day's vehicle was found. It's about 50 yards off the road into a very heavily wooded area. Following that, we then went to an area where his clothes were found, which was several miles from that location. And at that point, they had indicated that that Jelani's body and his belongings, his wallet, lanyard, and other personal items were in other different places away from where his body was found and away from the car was found. And so they're saying that all of this does not add up. This is not something that would be within character of Jelani Day at all to, first of all, even be in this situation, to even be in this place an hour from Bloomington Normal, which was his new college home. He just moved campus a week and a half before this. And so their indication was this is not something that he would have done on his own.
So what's next?
Well, Mrs. Day certainly wants to continue to apply pressure on police to get a more extensive investigation underway, but police have been very quiet.
And it seems like that will be the LaSalle County Sheriff's Department. They've led since Bloomington Police stepped back. Eric Stock, thank you very much for your work today. After a march and a rally in La Salle, Peru, in honor of Jelani Day, the ISU graduate student who disappeared from campus and was later found in the Illinois River. A law enforcement expert says it's rare but not unprecedented for the FBI to take over a local investigation. That's what the family of Jelani Day wants. The Illinois State University graduate student drowned in the Illinois River near Peru. It's been 2 months or more since Day was first reported missing. His family believes Day was murdered. Bill Lally teaches criminal justice at Illinois State University and Eureka College. He notes the FBI took over the infamous Mississippi burning case in 1964. But Lally tells Eric Stock the FBI is reluctant to take on a large role in local cases. He says they would need evidence local authorities aren't capable of handling the case themselves or evidence of a civil rights violation.
That's not the case right now. We don't seem to have enough indicators stating that this may have been a homicide. The fact of the matter is we really just don't have any indicators to say that it's gone in either direction. Generally speaking, you divide a death into four different categories as far as manner. That's going to be accident, natural causes, suicide, and homicide. And there's not enough details in the case to be able to point to any one of these four.
Jelani Day's mother, Carmen Bolden Day, has urged people to call the Illinois Attorney General's office to get on the case. They have painted this as the local authorities can't be trusted. The state attorney general apparently has not responded to those requests. Typically, what impact does applying political pressure have, either on, say, an attorney general's office or the FBI or getting members of Congress involved?
In cases where agencies have clearly not put forth the amount of effort required to do a thorough investigation, in cases where agencies lack the resources to be able to do a competent investigation, then political pressure generally opens those avenues to those investigating agencies so they can get access to those necessary resources, or that they either put more effort into their investigation or eventually have other agencies say, if you would like some additional help, we are here. And therefore, that allows the mechanism for those other agencies to come in and assist in the investigation.
Specifically, what do you think the FBI is contributing in this case, the behavioral analysis, and what else might they be assisting with?
The FBI might have access to, as far as intelligence files, they may be able to coordinate better with other agencies, such as the state police, the other sheriff's offices. Generally, when you have a case like this, the FBI will say, our complete resources are at your disposal. The FBI has amazing resources with regard to forensic applications, forensic laboratories. That's not to say that Illinois State Police doesn't also have laboratories that are very competent, but generally speaking, the FBI is on the cusp of the latest technologies, and they are at the forefront when we talk about forensic investigations.
It does sound like it's pretty rare, though, that the FBI would take on a larger role in a local investigation, even if that potential is there.
It is. And keep in mind that the issue of jurisdiction has always been one that is sensitive as far as who has authority where and whose authority may supersede another's. So over time, I think that the FBI and the state and local authorities have developed a sense of what is appropriate and what is not. But there are times when there is a conflict in agreement over jurisdiction, and those things can get pretty ugly.
So when we understand that the Peru police chief has handed over files to the FBI in this investigation, what should we interpret from that? Should we believe that this is an indication that this investigation is going anywhere?
I think that what you're seeing is the chief handing over as much information as the department has been able to gather at this time to the FBI and basically saying, what can you do with this? There's nothing wrong with asking for help. And it is evident that their investigation is not developing any further leads that will take them in one direction or the other. So the natural or the common sense next step would be to take that information and turn it over to an agency that, again, may have more resources available or may just have a fresh set of eyes to take a look at what's going on and investigate to an extent. Again, this is not a federal jurisdiction, but to take a look at things that they might be able to do as far as contributing to the case. This is not an issue, I don't believe, of the Peru Police Department handing it over to the FBI and saying, you take this over. I think this is an issue of where else do you think we can go with this?
That was criminal justice professor Bill Lally with Eric Stock.